Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of Creative Caravan Roadshow. This is your host, Suzanne Lawrence, and I'm here with Wendy Dewar Hughes, my co-host. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, Suzanne. How are you?
I'm doing good. Gosh, we've got an exciting guest with us today. I'm so excited about this. I've known Carolyn. We were just talking about this for quite a while online, although we haven't met up in person yet, but we will one of these days, never fear. So I'm not going to do a big introduction because I think that she's going to talk to us about some stuff about her book today. But welcome, Carolyn. How are you?
Thanks very much. It's lovely to be with you and your clients and audience and followers. Very nice.
Great. Okay. Well, your name is Carolyn Howard Johnson, and you always tell people you don't have the red roof or something?
Yeah, the orange roof, but a lot of people who are younger don't get that. don't get the joke.
Yeah, the Howard Johnson Motel, and I used to get ice cream for some reason. That was always fun. But the other thing I've heard you say to people that your job is to help authors be in charge of their own careers, and that sounds really cool. So without me telling all about your background, why don't you tell us about your background, and that's going to help our listeners understand why you're exactly the right person to help them learn how to take charge of their own careers if they're an author.
Okay. Well, first of all, we live in the best time to be in charge of our own careers if we're authors, because it used to be that we really were at the total mercy of agents or and publishers, but today we have all the different possibilities for publishing. So it's a really exciting time, but it does increase our responsibility in terms of learning more about the industry. We might not get the guidance that we once got before. In fact, even if you do publish the traditional way, you are very likely not to get the same kind of guidance, help, support that you would have once gotten in the days of Jackie Onassis, who was an acquisition editor and would take a fledgling author and literally baby them through the process. That just rarely happens anymore, unless you're one of those who gets, you know, $1 million advance, and those are rare these days too. So we have to learn to do that ourselves, and really the only way we can do that is through educating ourselves. And of course we have the web to help us. I believe that the most frugal way to educate ourselves is with books. The reason that's better than the web is that if you have an accomplished person putting things together in a book, the stuff that they think that you need to know, then you have a foot up instead of just randomly going around the web and getting some things that are reliable and some things that are not so reliable, taking the word from other new authors as opposed to more seasoned authors, that kind of thing. So books are a great way to go, and I always say, read more than one book on any topic, whether it's editing or marketing or whatever. But that gives you an idea. You need to be your own editor. You may need to be your own formatter. You may need to be your own book designer. You may even need to be your own cover designer. So these are decisions that you have to make as to whether or not you want to do that. And if you decide not to do that, then you have to be in a position to both hire and partner with someone who will do it for you. So in any case, you need to know something, because it's going to make you put out a more accomplished product. Does that cover the waterfront there?
Yeah, sort of. I want you to tell people, though, why they should listen to you, because you've got a lot of experience. For example, you have been an instructor for nearly a decade at the renowned UCLA Extension Writers Program. You've got this multi-award-winning series of book called the How to Do It Frugally series, just all kinds of things. So just tell people a little bit more about your background in terms of how you know all this stuff about publishing.
Okay, well, I think it comes with old age and having had a lot of careers. but generally speaking, I believe that everybody brings their totality of life's experience and anything new they're taking on. So regardless of where your authors are, they can do the same thing. But I started out in journalism, and that helped me understand how to approach feature editors or business editors or whatever better, so that you can better convince them that they need to cover you with free public relations, as opposed to buying advertising, which isn't nearly as effective. And then I started my own family. That had certain advantages. I kind of understand what kids need for children's author, for children's writing. And then my husband and I opened our own business in retailing, and that helped me understand a whole lot about marketing. But it also helped me understand a whole lot about how retailers need to make a profit. So authors who need to approach these people, I can help them do that in order to give them maybe a workshop or a book signing in their stores. There are certain things that they will want to hear and certain things that they won't want to hear, and your query letter can convince them one way or the other. And during all that time I was writing, so I've written in every genre, and I've published almost every way. So when I talk about publishing, I don't favor one kind of publishing over another. I believe that there's a best way for every title and every author, depending on their pocketbook. So it helped me that way. And then, of course, as an educator at UCLA, I loved that because I got to be close up and personal with a whole lot of authors. And got a better understanding of a broader range of the problems that people were experiencing. And my genres have covered the waterfront, too, everything from how-to books for authors to poetry, which they say is an impossible genre to market, but it isn't. And I've written a novel that won many prizes. I've written a book of short stories based on real life. A term for that now is being used is creative nonfiction. So that helps. That helps too. So I think I am the one.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say my books also tend to be written in down to earth language. I know that most of us have been through school. We've done it in college, done it in high school, and we're just not up for reading tomes and textbooks. So all my how-to books are written with a lot of anecdote and a lighter tone so that they aren't going to bore an author to death before she gets what she needs.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the Frugal series, I know the book that that I've recommended for years to everyone is The Frugal Book Promoter, because that's just great. And when I'm talking with authors that, you know, I coach to write books, I always say, you've got to get this book because, you know, you've got to know all this stuff about marketing. But now you've come out with this other book called The Frugal Editor. So I want you to tell us, you mentioned gremlins in here. Tell us what these gremlins are and who this book is for and what this book is going to do to help people who read it.
Well, we've all read fairy tales in our day, right? Or had our mother read fairy tales to us. And the gremlins are the little guys who will get you. And in terms of editing, there are a lot of them out there, and they are after you. And no matter how proficient you think you are with grammar and writing, they're still going to get you. In fact, they even get professional editors. So I wrote this book because The Frugal Editor, because I could see that authors who obviously give themselves credit, as well they should, for being very talented writers and and already knowing a lot about grammar, still tend to take it on themselves. And I also wrote it because there's a lot of things, even if you do convince yourself that you need to hire an editor to, say, edit your book, there's a lot of things that we write every day that we can't very well hire an editor to look at every single thing we write. you know, our marketing blurbs, our query letters, our media kits. I happen to have a wonderful, I call him anal retentive husband, who is very detail oriented, and he finds all kinds of stuff that I miss. And I edit. That's one of the things I do for a living. So, but I don't see my own errors, and most people don't. Because when we write, we're replicating, for the most part, we're replicating our own voice. We become familiar with our material. We see what we think should be on the page instead of what really is on the page. He also picks up things in terms of formatting that that I don't see. Like occasionally there'll be a smaller font, maybe caused by the actual process of editing on one of the letters in one of the words. And it's just the difference between an 11-point and a 12-point, and he'll see it. But I won't, because I know what's supposed to be there. So go ahead. Does that ever happen to you?
Yeah, in fact, Wendy and I talk about that a lot, don't we, Wendy, about editing and how you use your own.
Yeah, and it is so hard.
I tell authors we need to be patient with each other, because, you know, a lot of us are the first ones to draw a pistol and shoot when we see somebody else with an editing error in their book. But it's going to happen to you sooner or later. So I really suggest that we be a little bit more patient and approach an author with a helpful attitude, as opposed to a pissy attitude. Can I say that? Can I say that on your show? Or, you know, I could have been worse.
Right. Wendy, have you got a question for Carolyn?
Yes. In your book, you say that people misunderstand editing. And I'm just wondering what you mean by that. How do you define editing?
Well, a lot of people, Wendy, think of it just as typo hunting. You know, that they turn it over to somebody, which is really what I'm doing when I turn it over to my husband. But it's a whole lot more than that. It's having a take on syntax. There's a wonderful author who happens to also be a personal friend, but I met her. She was sitting at the very back row of one of my classes at UCLA. And when I realized how much she could offer a class on editing because of her experience in writing books on grammar herself, I made her come sit up in the front row and help me. Her name's June Casagrande, and she has written several now. One was published by Penguin, a couple by Ten Speed. The first one was called Grammar Snobs Are Great Big Meanies. And in that, she explains the difference between style choices and actual grammar rules. And, you know, most authors are not editors. Most authors had very strict English teachers who taught grammar rules. And a lot of those rules that our English teachers taught us aren't rules to begin with. They're grammar choices. They're preferred grammar choices. So that alone can lead an author astray. And the other thing that they often do is they send their books off to their old English teachers. Well, English teachers are exactly that. They're not editors. And they don't understand the world of publishing. And they don't understand that some of the things that we authors write are for purposes of marketing. And they really don't often even understand how things like dialogue are punctuated. So you get bad advice. So that's why they misunderstand what an editor is.
Yeah, it's really important to know who the right person is. And you, I just wanted to ask this too. You devote a chapter of the book to getting organized as it applies to editing. How does an author get organized?
Well, you probably noticed that I include some old-fashioned things in that particular chapter, and I do that because I believe that each of us works differently. Some of us are better at text. Some of us are still working, still really like to work with a pen in our hands. But I also believe that some things, some of the organizational things that we do are definitely more suited to certain aspects of editing than others. And it helps if we have all the tools at hand before we even start. So I believe every author should edit her own book before she turns it over to an editor. It will probably save her money, especially if the editor charges by the hour. But it will also make it easier on the editor. So she should get all those little ducks in a line, and all of her research manuals, all of her homonym books, maybe do some reading on editing before she starts, and move from there.
So basically, some good books and resources on editing is a great place for authors to start.
Exactly. Well, I see that you already did that, Wendy, so that thrills me to death.
In your book, you say great editing is great branding. What does that mean to an author?
Well, as you can tell, I'm really into marketing. When I went back to school to USC, I was lucky enough. I had some extra hours I needed to take, and I was lucky enough to get a past president of an airlines that is now defunct, but he was a past president. He was a great marketer, and he was head of the PR department, and he believed in teaching the basic public relations course because he wanted to get the most talented PR marketing people into his program, and he knew that if he got them before they had started another major, that he would get them. Well, I was almost graduated at that time, so he wasn't going to get me. But in a sense, he did, because he convinced me how important marketing is to every aspect of our lives. And so editing is part of our marketing approach. It's part of what we do when we picture that we're painting for other people of who we are when we submit anything. Whether it's our marketing materials or whether it's our creative materials, if it's poorly edited, we're going to lose interest and maybe even lose a lot more than just interest. We might actually lose being published or lose an opportunity to get great PR. So agents are notorious, agents as an example are notorious for being very picky. So I don't know if you saw in that book, there's a whole chapter on the pet peeves that agents have. But agents reflect the pet peeves that publishers have and the pet peeves that editors have too. And that's part of editing, is avoiding those pet peeves. Editing isn't only about grammar and punctuation and syntax. It's also about wording and saying the things that you know will convince people, will bend people to your way of thinking, or at least to not being critical of you before they've even given your work a chance. So you want to avoid those big faux pas. I'll give you an example just so that your audience can understand, because they haven't read the book maybe yet. One of the things that most authors say in their query letters is, in the paragraph that they know they should write about their own experience, they say, "I always wanted to write." Can you imagine how tired agents and publishers are of seeing that in a query letter?
Yes.
I mean, if they have 15 query letters on their desk in a day, they may have 12 people who say that. So that one mistake alone, if they're tired and their eyes are bleary from reading query letters that day, that one mistake alone can make them roll their eyes and think, this woman or this man cannot write. Mm-hmm. And therefore, either not read the first chapter of your book, or at least not give it the kind of consideration that they should.
That chapter
is full of those kinds of ideas.
Right. That kind of brings us to another question that's kind of related, which is, what are the most common mistakes authors can make that can be corrected with careful self-editing?
surprising because we've all known homonyms since we were young. We all know the difference between two, two, and two, and there, and there, don't we? But it's such an easy mistake to make when we're typing, and such an easy mistake to overlook. But then you throw into the mix the really advanced homonyms. And although this one isn't that particularly advanced, I'll give you an idea. I have a good online friend who has written something like 15 mysteries. And I try to read one of his mysteries every now and then, just because I love him and because I do enjoy their cozy mysteries. They make me relax. And in one of his books, a medal, like an award, like a military medal, appears several times in that book. Maybe, when I say several, maybe 15 times that word appears. And in every instance, it's spelled M-E-T-A-L. Oops.
Oh, wow.
Oops. Mm-hmm. He didn't catch it. His editor didn't catch it. His publisher's editor didn't catch it. And he told me that no one had noticed or mentioned it to him.
Wow. I actually have a similar story. I wrote something in a comment on a writer's group or something, and I spelled alter, which is the noun, an alter to something, A-L-T-E-R, and someone caught me on it, and I thought, I can't see what's wrong with that sentence. So I sent it to my editor, and she said, it's supposed to be A-L-T-A-R.
Yeah, and there are so many of those. There is a really excellent editor. She only edits nonfiction. Her name is Barbara McNichols, and she has a little word tripper book. And I love that little word tripper book. She gives it away free. It's part of her marketing plan. So if you Google Barbara McNichol, it's M McNichol, M-C capital N-I-C-H-O-L. You can get that little free book. And you can get my little free book by subscribing to my newsletter, where I also sometimes cover little editing tips and marketing tips and articles on publishing, etc., by going to my website and signing up for my newsletter, and I will send that to you as a PDF ebook.
Great.
But it's also available online as a real paperback if you prefer to carry one with you and read it when you're traveling or whatever.
Oh, that's good to know. I know Suzanne's got a couple of more questions, so I'm going to pass it back to her.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I want to get back to the book for a minute because you sent me the book several weeks ago, and I really enjoyed it. Now, I sat down, believe it or not, just kind of read it cover to cover because I'm a fast reader, and I get into something, and I really like it, and I thought, wow, you know, this is a great book, another one that I can recommend to all my writer friends because I love the things you had on dialogue and, you know, common mistakes and punctuating dialogue and just different things that I thought, well, you know, writers need to know this, and some people probably don't. But then I got to wondering, you know, what is the best way for an author to use this book, The Frugal Editor? What do you think? Should they just keep it as a handy desk reference, read it cover to cover? What are your suggestions for it?
Well, both. Both. You know, okay. you don't know what's really truly. It has a really good little index, but and tables of contents help always with a nonfiction book, but you really don't know what's in there. Or in any book until you read it through. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to spend hours and hours and hours and hours, but I really believe in reading it through at least quickly. But I prefer perusing, which, by the way, is another word that many of us use incorrectly. Perusing really means to really read intently. And a lot of people have come to use to mean the opposite.
Right.
So I believe that if it's perused, you will get a lot more out of the book. But I also tell people often to just keep it by their. By the way, my books are all part of an Amazon program where if you buy the paperback, then you get the. If you're a Prime member of Amazon, you also get the ebook at either a discount or free. Depends on the book. So it, you could go on, you know, then you can go online if you've got the ebook, and you can just look up the keywords and pick up everything on a specific topic, like punctuation or like homonyms or whatever. But you can always use the index that way and the table of contents too.
I do something before I
start any editing project for somebody else. And I read June Casagrande's book on syntax. And it's not that I don't know syntax, but it's just a refresher, you know? So I think that before anybody starts their own editing, they should pick up a book on homonyms, a book on editing, a book like one of June's or one of mine, and read it, because it gets them back into the, you know, into the mode. It gets the editing hat put firmly on their head before they start.
You know what, though, Carolyn? I think with this book, when I was reading it, because like I said, I sat down and I just started, you know, reading things. And as I was going through it, I found, oh, yeah, I didn't remember that, or I don't know if I knew that. And so I think it's almost like you don't know what you don't know sometimes. So to just look through the index, you may not think you need to know something, but if you just start and you do, like you said, look over the whole book first, then you're going to kind of find some stuff that you might not have known enough to try to find out about it. I'm not saying this very well, but that's kind of what I found.
Yeah, there were things
in there that sort of surprised me that I thought, ooh, yeah, I need to know that, but I didn't know I needed to know that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, I had an experience when I first started. I was very young when I started working for the Salt Lake Tribune as a reporter. And I had a really tough editor in the society department. She had been editor of the University of Utah's daily paper, and she was a tough cookie. And actually, I got ulcers working for her. But she also literally got me into being more of a professional. But one time she asked me, she said, "Well, why didn't you ask me?" And my answer was exactly what you're talking about. It was, I didn't know that I had the questions so I could ask you.
Right, so, exactly. Yeah.
So I have personal experience with that, and I love your approach on that. Exactly. We don't know what we don't know.
Yeah, so sometimes
if we're smart and we've developed some wisdom, we do know that there's a whole lot of stuff that we don't know. And the more wisdom I think we get, the more we realize that field is a lot broader than we ever imagined when we were only 16. But still, at any age, we don't know what we don't know.
Right. Oh, yeah. Gosh. Well, we've already talked a little bit about why self-published authors and other authors should hire editors and other professionals to help them get their books out. So I kind of want to move on, because we've only got about 90 seconds. So if you quickly got your best editing tip for authors, and then we also want to give your website address and stuff where people can find out where they can learn more about you, learn more about the book, learn more. You've got a great newsletter for writers, just all kinds of resources. So could you just tell us quickly your best tip, and then let us know where we can find out more about you online?
Okay, my best tip for editing your own material is to give yourself it's commonly known, sorry to be humdrum, but give yourself some days between the writing of it and the editing of it, and then a couple more days, if you possibly can, before you send it out and read it one more time.
Okay. All right. So tell us now where people, if they want to find out more about you, subscribe to your newsletter, just any of the wealth of great.
Okay, my website is howtodoitfrugally.com, and there are tons of special help, special resources on that site under the Writer's Resources tab at the top of the homepage. There's also everything on all the books that I published. And by the way, I've got another new poetry book just barely put up on Amazon. It's called Imperfect Echoes, and it's perfect for today's world when politics is trying to appeal to the baser instincts of humanity.
Wow.
It's a very serious poetry book, but I think also very timely.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay, well, we'll be looking for that. And people listening today, don't forget to check out The Frugal Editor. We've been talking today to Carolyn Howard Johnson. You can find out more about all the wonderful things that Carolyn does to help writers if you go to her website at howtodoitfrugally.com. So thanks so much for being with us, Carolyn, today. Thanks so much for writing all these great books and getting all these resources together for writers. And have a wonderful Labor Day weekend. Thanks so much. Good luck with the book.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Thank you both, Wendy and Suzanne.
Bye for now.
Okay, bye.